Welcome back to Researching Peace, the podcast brought to you by the Department of Peace and Conflict Research at Uppsala University. In three episodes, we're diving into a special theme that focuses on the connection between water, climate and conflict. Join us as we engage in conversations with three unique guests across three insightful episodes. Our guest in the studio today is a researcher here at our department and at PRIO. He is also a member of the Research School on Water Cooperation, and he has been a visiting researcher at the University of Michigan and UN Environment in Nairobi, Kenya. A warm welcome to Researching Peace, Stefan Döring.
Hello, thanks for having me.
How are you today, Stefan?
I'm good. It's raining a little bit too much, so there was a bit of too much water problem today. It's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, but you know how to handle water issues.
Yes, but also this is a good example for that. We'll probably have a lot of more extremes in the future, like maybe too little water and sometimes too much water.
Yeah. I know you will teach us a lot about water and conflicts today. Let's start on a basic level, I think, so we all understand. What is a water conflict?
Here at our department, we often talk about armed conflict or conflicts that involve violence. But then especially in the policy and also in academia, when people talk about water conflict, they often don't mean conflicts about, that use of force or use violence, right? Often what they mean is conflicts of interests or conflicts about how to allocate water, how much water should this area get? What's the quality of the water that we get? So often when I go to conferences, especially outside of conflict research, when people talk about water conflicts, they don't necessarily talk about the same things that you sometimes maybe see in a headline of a newspaper where it says water conflict, in Africa, or some very catchy phrases where the headlines sometimes suggest is more the use of violence, whereas, maybe diplomats would say, well, water conflicts is when we try to mediate between two states that have an issue over a river, but where they actually don't use of force. So I think it's probably not just to say there's one definition of water conflict. So I'm always hesitant to say there's water conflict, at least in the sense of how we use it in our department, when we talk about armed conflict. So I would probably make that the biggest distinction I would make to begin with. And then it's a question of what you're looking at. Are you looking at states? Are you looking at problems that are within countries, between different actors, maybe between regions, political parties to a certain extent even, or what are problems on water that are faced by individuals, right, based on maybe their socioeconomic status? Maybe there's lots of areas in cities, especially in urban, there's quite a difference between how people access water and what quality of water they access, when we talk globally, of course.
Would you say that we have a growing number of water conflicts in the world, or is that also just something popping up in media?
This is also, again, how do we define these? What are water conflicts? Are these conflicts in, for example, my research looks a lot into conflict in water scarce areas, and I don't necessarily say this is only about water, right? But water is an important part. Something we can see is these types of interstate disputes, I'm talking about disputes or some sort of conflict of interest between countries over rivers, for example, or dam building, things like that. That's where we see, of course, frictions. But I mean, we haven't seen any outright war over water, across the literature. There's some examples where it was maybe a little bit close, or at least there was some rhetoric. But we haven't seen states go to war with each other over water issues. This is actually a good thing, I think, that there's actually a growing number of agreements, of transboundary water agreements. So where states stipulate how water is to be shared. But there's also river basin organizations, so especially when we have rivers that are shared by many countries. Because then, of course, it's really important for a downstream country, so a country that's further down the river, how much water ends up coming to their country. And there, of course, there's lots of problems with these.
But what kind of problems can that be?
So, for example, if some country takes more water from the river than maybe an agreement stipulates, or if they pollute the water more, there could be problems about fisheries. There could be problems with dam building, which might have an effect on fisheries, or if dams are being built and the dam basin has to be filled, that means less water will run down, will go downstream. And that obviously has an effect on countries that rely on this water for their agriculture or other needs. These things can be exacerbated by climate change, because maybe a country needs more water now because there's a drought. But then the other country also needs more water, and that there's just less water in the water basin maybe.
now I'm jumping back a little bit to you as a person, but it's just because it pops up in my head. How was it that you were so interested in water in particular?
During my bachelor's degrees, I was interested in conflicts around resources, not necessarily water, but any type of natural resource. And I think I at some point was reading about hydro dams in Myanmar, I think. That was my first. I had had some internship at a different think tank in Stockholm, and that really sparked my interest. And I thought this, also seeing that what I still believe today, that there's still so much research to be done on water issues. I also think what I think is really cool about water is that, you know, you need to understand, like, even if you want to, even if you study the political issues, like, you need to understand some of the natural science things or geology issues. But maybe we can get to that later. I don't know. Which I think is really interesting because I think research has to always take into account, like, different perspectives and also different methodological approaches.
In your research, you talk about the spatial dynamics of communal violence. That's a difficult sentence for me, and I think maybe also for our listeners. So could you explain what it means?
So it looks at a very specific type of violence or armed conflict, which is communal violence. In itself, also a concept that summarizes many different types of conflict that more or less have all in common that they involve non-state actors, so actors that aren't tied to any government or country, that fight each other. And in many cases, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, we see this as pastoralist groups that fight over land or pasture or water issues with other pastoralist groups or farmer groups. And in this research, I'm looking into how, to what extent we see conflict spilling over. And by that, I mean we see a conflict happening in one area, and we're looking into how likely is it that we see the same type of conflict in a neighboring area.
Okay.
The way that water comes in here is that, at least in the literature on water scarcity or droughts within countries, we often have theoretical expectations that when people suffer from water shortages, not the first thing they do is not to take up arms or like to protest, but to actually move away and go somewhere else where there's better access to water, even if that's just temporarily. And that led us to like think that that would mean that if there's a drought happening in one area, it doesn't mean that we wouldn't expect to see conflicts in that area, but conflicts in another area, because people are moving and then share scarce resources. And that's actually what we find also in this article. We see that drought doesn't explain incidences of violence in one, like in the area where the drought hits the most, but in the neighboring areas. We don't exactly look into what's happening like on the ground, but we can see this for a large area that violence is a result in neighboring area of neighboring droughts. And I think maybe the further research can look more into sort of what's exactly happening. Is it really because of these migration patterns, or if it's other things like markets or maybe agricultural impact?
So help me then to understand, if you find this research, how can research help real life?
I mean, for this specific example, I think it's important for organizations that work with aid, that maybe we can help people more where droughts occur, so that maybe they don't have to move. But I mean, often these are, especially in this kind of conflicts, they're often results of very little state engagement, or like they occur because there is little help, or there's less governance and less resource access for a lot of people, not just water. So I think in a way this can help to prevent conflicts also, that we're aware of that, okay, so there's a drought happening in this area. We need to help people that are affected by this, but we also need to sort of look out what's happening in the surrounding areas.
In your research, you also explore the idea that the lack of water can actually lead to cooperation rather than conflict. That sounds quite counterintuitive for me. Can you help me understand? Why is that?
To a certain extent, when I look at some of the studies that are done on, for example, droughts, but also water scarcity more in general, like often people choose to look at conflicts, right? So they try to explain, or they try to study what explains conflicts. So their interest is in conflict. So they only look for cases where there's conflict. And then, of course, they will find that in certain cases, water scarcity might like play into incidences of violence or increase the dynamics of conflicts given other factors. What they then don't do is to consider other routes, right? So if you're very focused on studying conflict, you will forget about studying peace. And I think cooperation is like more than just peace, right? It means that people come together and like cooperate over certain resources to find solutions. And I mean, in most of the research that we see is that when communities are faced with scarcity, not just water, they try to do something about it, right? They don't just put their hands over their heads and like, oh no, like, you know, they try to do something. And it's much more likely actually that we see some type of cooperation or some type of working together to improve their situations. And that's what I see also in one of my research, part of my research, where I look into some of the same areas where I can see, for example, that low groundwater increases the incidence of communal violence. But these are the same areas where I also see, or some of these areas, not 100%, but like in a broad brush to say that some of these areas also see water cooperation, right? And it's, we shouldn't forget that violence is a very rare event that happens. Like even we have a database here, but it's like, you know, most of the time people are actually nonviolent to each other, right? Or even if there are disputes, they try to solve them nonviolently. So I think in that sense, it's actually not so surprising. It's just that where do we choose to look at, right? So if you see a headline that says conflict over water in country X or Y, that you wouldn't necessarily see a headline the day before, people work together on a water issue in country X or Y, because it doesn't sell as many newspapers maybe, right?
That's right, yeah.
But I think what's interesting about this is like under what conditions do people work together and like what helps to for people to work together. So, and that's also something I want to look into more.
You talked a little bit about the interdisciplinary part of your research before. So it seems like you really are involving various fields talking about water in research. Could you tell us more about in what way you are collaborating with experts in different areas?
Water is extremely interdisciplinary, right? So there's water research in almost every discipline, I would just say. Like, I haven't checked this, but like, definitely all the natural sciences. There's studies on conflict within engineering, fields, for example. And then, of course, like, we social scientists that specialize on conflict come in and it's like, you don't know anything about conflict, right? And when I go there and tell them what water data I use, they're like, you don't know anything about water, right? So, I think it's a very good example of where we see that we need to work together as researchers, right? So hydrologists need to work together with more social sciences, including psychology, economics, political science, because water affects us in so many different ways. It's important to consider governance issues, legal issues, and so on. But like what I'm looking into right now, what I'm starting to work more is to work with people that work within health, to work with psychology, childhood development, because I think it's really interesting to see how, in one way, like how people are affected health-wise, for example, when they don't have access to water, but then also how does that in turn affect their decision-making? In my opinion, it's very important to also combine disciplinary approaches and like work together with other scholars in other fields.
If we are looking ahead a little bit, what are the biggest water issues the world are facing the next, let's say, 10 years?
Due to climate change, we have more variability in climate, like in weather events. So like some places will probably see more rain. Other places will see much less rain. We see due to both because people use, for example, too much groundwater and also because sea level rises, we see saltwater intrusion. So we see saltwater coming into aquifers. So that means like, you know, your groundwater all of a sudden is salty because the seawater comes in. Also with rivers. So that's a problem. And like we see this despite in certain areas where we have population increases or rural to urban migration. So the need to access water will be greater in certain areas, while at the same time, it seems that there's more challenges of having access to safe water. And then, of course, water is also directly tied to agriculture, right? That's something we haven't talked so much about, but you need water for any types of agriculture. And we still have big challenges in providing food for everyone. And especially agriculture is also very much affected by climate change. So it will be very important, like to what extent do we allocate water between regions, also between sectors. We not just need water for our daily needs or for agriculture, but water is also very important for lots of industries like oil production and textile industry, lots of other industries that also use water. And it's very important how they treat water so that it can be reused again. for other purposes. So I think there's lots of challenges, but these are all things that people already work on, right? But we need to like continue working on these issues, including like seawater desalination technologies that they should be available to more people probably.
I have read that the former Secretary General of the United Nations said that the next war in the Middle East will be fought over water, not politics.
Yeah, and that was in the 90s, right? So that was exactly. Clearly not true.
What do you think about predictions like that?
I mean, we have again and again seen that these predictions aren't true, right? Yeah. The wars, are, as I said earlier, wars aren't fought over water. When wars occur, one of the biggest issues is water, right? So like more children die. In areas affected by wars, there's more children dying because of water-related diseases than through bullets. And we sometimes forget about that when we look into these regions that are affected by war. We know that the research at this department, we're looking into like what explains wars, but we also need to look into, well, what happens to people that are affected by war? And not just at the like diplomacy level, but also like helping people that are displaced, that are looking for shelter, that are looking for food and water.
Stefan Döring, thank you so much for joining Researching Peace.
You're welcome. Thank you.